If you felt like you had to keep a secret from everyone you knew, strangers and colleagues and loved ones alike, for decades, and if the truth you concealed was at the heart of your real identity, you can imagine how excruciating that would feel. April Ortiz held out for more than 40 years until this spring she came out publicly as a trans woman in small-town Texas. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Ortiz had felt since early childhood that her body should be female, but nobody around her picked up on this, or at least maybe until recently, nobody would have understood. As she writes in her coming out essay, published in March in the Texas Observer, she is one of those trans people who have been part of our communities throughout human history, but have often just not felt safe coming out. April Ortiz is a writer, artist, and college professor. Her recent essay is titled, I Am a Trans Texan. April, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much.
So you were assigned male at birth, which is to say everybody assumed you were a boy based on the shape of your body. What do you remember about first realizing the truth of your identity?
Well, it goes back to my earliest memories. It goes back, I think, before I could really articulate what I was feeling. Beginning as far back as I can remember, I just felt that I should be a girl, or in some strange way, I was a girl, even though my body didn't conform to that. When I went to school and just sort of learned more about the world around me, my feeling about that became much more conscious. And I was better able to articulate it, at least to myself, although it still wasn't something I felt safe talking to the adults around me about.
Did they try, adults in your life, to get you to behave in ways that appeared stereotypically masculine?
Yes. I wouldn't call myself a particularly gendered child either way. I had baby dolls that I liked to play with. I also liked to play with toy guns. My parents were very good people, very traditional, and I was a boy to them. And so that was the expectation of my behavior, was that I would do more or less stereotypically boy things to an extent, although, they tried to affirm me for who I was. There was just sort of a general expectation that this is how boys and men behave, and I'm one of those, and so that's how I should behave.
What sort of toll did those expectations take on you emotionally?
As I got older, they made me quite miserable. I just didn't, it was like fitting a square peg into a round hole. I wasn't what society around me expected me to be. And that was very hard.
We should note, April, given that you're 43, you grew up well before the current era of a lot of trans children coming out. So you feel certain there was nothing in your environment that, this is the kind of thing that concerns other people, that somehow gave you the idea that you were a girl. You knew you were a girl.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that because I would say that I grew up under a gender ideology, which was a very complementarian one, where, men are men and women are women, and they complement each other. So what one lacks, the other makes up, and together they make a whole. I grew up under an ideology that said, this is how men behave. So sort of everything in my life militated against what I felt myself to be. So far from growing up under what some people in our time call gender, quote unquote, gender ideology, I grew up in a world where I was very much expected to conform to traditional gender stereotypes.
So how did you find ways secretly to kind of engage with your femininity?
Well, as I wrote about in my Texas Observer essay, As soon as I was able to be left at home by myself, which is probably about the sixth grade, I started wearing my mother's clothing. That went on for a number of years. I was constantly terrified of discovery. Eventually, I was discovered more or less, and I knew that I had to stop that. I had this whole secret life of the mind that I just, it wasn't safe for me to share with other people. Once I grew up and moved out on my own, I could be a little bit more free to experiment, and I did. And so for a period of time as a young adult, I lived something of a double life where I would present as male to the outside world, but when I was home by myself or with my wife, I would present as female.
But you were still always worried that someone who wouldn't understand would learn this.
Yes, yeah, that was a constant fear. We were part of a church that had traditional expectations. We lived in the same town as some of my in-laws, and so I was constantly afraid that they would find out and it would cause, there'd be negative consequences for our relationship with them. And, just in general, it's hard to explain this, but I was rather afraid to be honest with myself and to admit the truth about myself, which I still couldn't really articulate in the way that I do now. So there was a certain line I could sort of come up to, but not go beyond, because going beyond that would mean really heading down the slope that, frankly, rather frightened me at the time.
Well, you know that even in college, when you were sort of old enough to seek out information on your own and try and understand yourself, you like went to the university library, and the texts that you found that dealt with trans identities at all were like really out of date even then.
Yes, that's right. At the time, one term that was very commonly thrown around was transvestite. That's largely come to have negative connotations since then. Most people prefer the term crossdresser. But there was, at least from what I could understand at the time, there was sort of this dichotomy between what was called a transvestite, which is someone that just likes to wear women's clothing, and what was called perhaps a transsexual, which is someone who, from a very early age, might have been very vocal about insisting that they're a girl and wanting to live the life of a female person. And I just didn't really seem to fit in to either of those categories neatly. So when I talked to my fiance before we got married, I wanted to be honest with her about myself. I was 20 or 21 at the time. I sat her down. It so happens right outside the library where I worked. And we had a long conversation about this. And I tried to articulate to her the truth about myself, but I really lacked the words. I mean, I was in search of a theory, but it was a theory that just wasn't available to me at the time, and perhaps hadn't been completely developed as it is now.
So we know things turned out well. You married and had kids together. Were you afraid before you told her that that might be the end of this really great relationship in your life?
Oh, yes, I was very afraid of that. But I felt like I owed it to her to make that choice herself.
How did she respond?
She was affirming, but I think also a little bit frightened about what the implications might be. There was just really no telling how far this might go. It's kind of like, you're working in the yard and you find a root and you try to pull it up and you're not really sure what it's attached to. I mean, it might just come right up, or it might be the root of a tree and you don't know it. And there is a sense of that we just don't know exactly what this is. But she was still willing to marry me, which I'm grateful for.
And you're still together today.
Yes, we're still together.
April, What feels different to you when you are able to move about the world, move about your private space, but also in public, in the sort of dress that you're most comfortable in? Like, how does your soul feel different when you're able to just be who you are?
I am so, so happy. And I never could have imagined it possible. It's like I had a headache my entire life so that I didn't even really know that I had a headache. And then one day it just finally stopped and I can live my life now. And, you know, there's discomfort associated with it. You know, I go out about town. I live in a small town where everyone notices everything and everyone knows who I am, no matter where I go. But, you know, it's just, my life is beautiful, and my relationships with my loved ones, it seems almost paradoxically, they're so much better because I'm myself in a way that I never have been.
So are there like types of joy that you're able to access living your real identity that just didn't exist for you before?
Yes, I laugh a lot more, I've noticed. My wife has noticed this also. And when I laugh, I mean, this is something I've never experienced, but when I laugh, it makes me happy and it makes me want to keep laughing. And I've never experienced anything like that in my life. Just before, it just always felt like I was this walking incongruity, a contradiction of terms. And now just everything sort of fits together and I understand my life and I understand who I am. And I just could imagine no greater gift.
Was there something about this past year that helped you realize you just really needed to be able to live your true identity in order to survive?
Yes, there were a lot of things. Really, a lot of things came together at once. I will say, partly, I had a realization last fall, and I'll get to why in a moment, but I had a realization that, you know, I was slowly killing myself just through neglect. And it was because I hated my life and I hated what I was. And, you know, I want to be alive to see my grandkids if I have grandkids. And that wasn't going to happen the way I was living. You know, I live in the town of Uvalde, Texas. I used to have to explain to everyone where that was because no one had heard of it. But of course, now everyone has heard of it for all the wrong reasons. And this is something I've been reticent to discuss because I don't want to center myself in all that's happened here. But, you know, I've written a lot about events in Uvalde. I wrote two essays for Texas Monthly, and I wrote one for the Texas Observer. And the last one in particular, which I wrote for Texas Monthly, is called Uvalde Revolts. It was about some of the protests that have taken place here for the summer and fall. And I had to go way outside my comfort zone to write that by interviewing a lot of activists, but also people closely connected to the tragedy, mothers and relatives. And that, I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional. It shattered me as a person. To be that close to something like that and to see firsthand the anger and the deep sadness. I was also constantly conflicted about my own role. I mean, what am I here? Am I an observer, a participant? You know, by what right am I bothering all these people to write my story? At the same time, I already had quite a bit of loss of faith in institutions before May 24th, but certainly after that, I just saw institution after institution fail to answer for it. And I don't know, I just, something inside of me broke. And I came to this point where I just knew that I needed to figure out my own life. And I can't really this close even articulate how that's connected with everything that's happened here. But, you know, my last essay, the Uvalde Revolts, it came out, I think, October 28th. And October 30th, I started a journal. And the first entry of that journal, I came out to myself. I admitted to myself for the first time in my life that I am a trans person. And after that, there was no going back.
Why do you think it took so long to admit it to yourself? It feels like maybe that truth was always there under the surface. Was it just that you felt like you could not confront that before? It was too dangerous or too, I don't know.
It was, yes, it was too dangerous. So, you know, I mean, I mentioned how early on in my marriage, we've been married more than 20 years, but in the early years, I had kind of a double life, where I present as female at home. I quit that cold turkey, so to speak, because partly because I was afraid of discovery, but partly because I just felt like I was opening a Pandora's box, and I didn't really know what was at the bottom or even if there was a bottom. And so, you know, I went from that to decades of self-contradiction, really. And so, yes, I literally tried to avoid learning anything about being transgender, because I just felt like it was a dangerous thing for me to know about, even though suppressing it was part of my daily reality, and affected really every part of my life, through my mental health and other things. But also I'm Catholic, and famously, a lot of people in the Catholic Church are not okay with what I am. And I was really trying to adhere to that. And, you know, I came to a point in my life where I just realized that, like, I can't live my life according to someone else's axiomatic system. I have to start with my own experienced reality and find my path to truth from there.
April, you were living in a challenging time to try and avoid, you know, hearing about, thinking about trans folks. I mean, there's been such a more public presence of trans folks in our society. How had you felt before you came out, even to yourself, as more and more trans people were making the choice to live their true identities? Were you, like, secretly happy for them? Were you envious of them? Or was it something else?
It's hard to describe the feeling that I had. I'll say I bet I would not have come out to myself as transgender if it were not for Twitter. It saddens me to see all the trouble that it has right now. But, you know, I got on Twitter originally, really to follow social justice issues, you know, after the death of George Floyd. And, you know, I began following just a variety of people because I wanted to see what, you know, I'll just see the experiences of people in the real world around me. And so, you know, I ended up following some trans men and trans women and non-binary people. And I started to get wistful that, well, I mean, they seem to be able to do this. Like, why can't I? Yeah, but even still, I couldn't admit to myself that I was what they are. Yes, I mean, I would say wistfulness was maybe the feeling that I felt. It just seemed like something that was out of reach. And you know, last August, I interviewed for a literary journal where I'd submitted a memoir that talked about growing up with gender dysphoria. Which is the feeling basically that you are born in the wrong sex. And the interviewer asked a very logical question, which, am I trans? And that was this question I'd never allowed myself to ask myself. And I said, well, I don't know. But as soon as the words had left my lips, I did know. I did know that I was trans, in my heart. That sort of began the process of coming out to myself.
Do you feel like that process is complete? Is it still hard for you to be talking so candidly about these things now?
No, it is not complete. I mean, it's a road that I have just barely started down. It is hard to talk about it openly. I mean, it was very hard to write that essay and to see it come out in print and to have all of my colleagues read that and to have to deal with that and so on and so forth. So no, it's very hard. And it's I just don't it's hard for me to admit that I just don't know. I don't know everything, I don't know how it all fits together. I've got some contradictory ideas in my head, and I know that. And so I'm still kind of trying to figure things out, and I don't know that I really ever will. But I'm happy.
April, you mentioned that your wife has known since the time you were engaged to one another. You also have children. Did they know your identity before you came out to them?
No, I mean, I think in some ways there were some things that made more sense to them after I did. But no, I wouldn't say that they really did.
So what was it like? How did you prepare to tell them?
Well, I talked to each of them individually. I thought for a long time before I spoke to them to think about what I would say. I started with my middle child, who's my older daughter, who is just very independent thinker. She's very politically conscious, even though she's just 13. And we just I took her to get some coffee, and we went to the park here in Uvalde, and we sat there for about 2 hours, and I told her about myself. And it was actually a really wonderful conversation. And it just feels good being seen by my own kids in a way that I never had before. I took my son, who's my oldest child, on a long drive in the country, and that was a little harder, I would say. He's just, we don't have a lot in common. We love each other very much, but he's very masculine presenting and very athletic, and I mean that's just who he is. I mean, he's a beautiful person, and it was hard for him to hear the truth about me, I think, but yeah, that's something that we're working through. We talk a lot, and I have a younger daughter who's in elementary school, and she just kind of shrugged her shoulders and then wanted to move on to the next thing.
Like, no big deal.
No big deal. And she's growing up in a different world even from the one that my older kids have grown up in.
Did you think before coming out about the effect this would have on your kids, or was it at a point where you just couldn't even put that experience, whatever it might be, in front of your own need to be yourself?
I thought about nothing other than my kids. I mean, the rest of the world can go jump in a lake. But, I love my kids so much, and I want what's best for them. I thought about waiting until maybe at least until my son was out of high school before coming out, because I knew this would be a kind of hard. And I decided against it. History will have to tell whether I made the right decision. But, partly I was terrified. I knew I was going to come out of it eventually. It was going to have to happen. And I was terrified that maybe if he grew up before I talked to him about it and got to know him as myself, we would be strangers as adults. And, now we have a chance to find a new footing with each other and to, grow to know each other in a new way. And I really hope that we're successful at that.
Uvalde is a pretty small city. I think the population is something like 25,000 people. What has it been like for you to encounter neighbors who knew you when you were presenting as male and see them now, but you look very different?
Well, it's terrifying. I go shopping at HEB as I am now. Yeah, it's our grocery store here. And I mean, I just kind of go out wherever I want to. And yeah, that's intimidating. Not everyone here really knows yet. It's sort of slowly getting out to the community. I'm about to go to a meeting with some other community members on a project we're trying to start up here. It'll be my first time meeting with these people as myself. So, I mean, that's a happy moment for me, but it's intimidating also. I came fully out to my university community about a week and a half ago. And I did that because my what I've written was starting to, spread beyond my control. And I had people calling out to ask me, is it really true? And just sort of having some unpleasant conversations like that. So I just decided I needed to get ahead of it. And I, sent out an email whose subject line was name and pronouns and just sort of hit people between the eyes with it. And yeah, that's been mostly positive. I've gotten a lot of support. But once you're out, you're out. And so I'm giving it the old college try, and I am just, coming to work as a professional woman, which is exciting and very different for everyone around me.
April, this is all so new for you. I mean, I really admire that you're able to speak publicly about this while also really navigating a lot of brand new situations and relationships that might feel different to you. Is there something about being public about it that you feel like might make some of that easier, like tell your story before you run into somebody in the grocery store?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. And yes, I would agree with that very much. I hadn't planned to just like jump out of the closet the way I have. And the reason I did was because, things are getting rather dark for trans people across the nation. They're being targeted by state legislatures in a way they never have in the recent past. And it's scary. It is a scary time. And a lot of the freedom that I have now in coming out and seeking gender affirming care is built on the shoulders of trans people of the past who suffered and sometimes died to stand up for their rights. And I just could not in good conscience sit by and wait until it was safe, I guess is how I would put it. And, I had a conversation with my wife. It's the Texas Observer. I'd reached out, interested in me writing more stories for them. And she said, well, I think you should write about being trans and just try to help people understand and maybe persuade them that we're just people like everyone else. So, I did that. But in a way, at least for me, it's made things easier in Uvalde because it is like, ripping off the Band-Aid all at once. Now it's just out there, like it or not, this is what I am. And otherwise, like every little thing I changed was going to be something people would comment on. I shaved my beard last fall. I'd had a beard for like 20 years. And I shaved my beard off. That was sort of my first step in transition. And like everyone in town noticed, and people I didn't know would see me at the store, and then they'd go to my wife and say they'd seen me. No, the beard is gone. And I just couldn't see myself doing that for 3 years or however long it took for the process to go on. So yeah, in a way, it's easier to just have it out there. It's stressful, of course, and it's a little tougher on my family, honestly. So there's been some trade-off there, but yeah, I'm hopeful that in the end it was the right decision.
You remind us in this Texas Observer essay that there have been 30 bills filed in Texas alone that are considered anti-trans in the last year. Have you thought about leaving Texas? Do you feel like you can be safe here?
No, I don't feel like I can be safe here. I feel like I have an axe hanging over my head at every moment. And yes, I have thought about leaving, and I won't hide that I've searched for jobs in other states. You know, it's hard because my kids are in school. My son, I mean, he loves his high school. He's doing well there, and we don't feel like it would be good to uproot everyone. But I mean, if I can't survive here, I can't survive here. So what is that going to mean for my family? I don't know, but we have to figure out a way to survive somehow. So yeah, I've thought about leaving, and I hope it doesn't come to that. But it's something that we've had long and difficult conversations about.
Has anybody in your life, a colleague, a neighbor, someone who was taken completely by surprise by your coming out, been kind of amazing about it?
Yeah, actually, most people have. I've been very blessed by the support that I've received from the people around me. I came out to a very good old friend at first, who's known both my wife and I since we were all teenagers together, and you know she's been lovely and supportive to me, and I don't think I would have survived without her. I told some of my colleagues who were wonderfully supportive. My wife has told some of the people that she trusts in her life. And really, I mean, aside from some family issues that we're dealing with right now, I mean, everyone has just been so kind and supportive. And you know, I don't really know what my life would be like if I didn't have that.
April Ortiz is a writer, artist, and college professor. Her recent essay, I Am a Trans Texan, was published in the Texas Observer. April, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.